So one of the things I like about living in the Northwest, or the Pacific Northwest, and Tacoma in particular...
Aside from the weather,
it's finally nice, is on the way up here, we drove past a, and I'm paraphrasing here, a freaking garage sale. A freaking garage sale. And there was a guy out front playing the bagpipes to bring people to his garage sale.
Is that what qualifies as freaking?
I if that doesn't qualify as freaking, I'm not certain what does.
Yeah, you don't freaking qualify if that doesn't qualify.
This is Ask an Atheist. Our phone number is 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike and Rich. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. Doing well.
Great. And, get this over and done with. 137 days. Anything else need to be said?
Nothing else wants to be said. this Harold Camping guy, has done more good for us than any other human being. I still want him to die.
Yeah.
That's... In his sleep, not violently.
Not in a grease fire.
No. I had to think about that one, but no.
I hear you. And, you kind of wish he'd just go away and go away forever, but you don't want violence.
I don't want violence. Yeah. I'd like him to fade into obscurity.
Well, yeah, might as well dive right in. This is going to be an interesting one. A few months ago, back during the scan days, and I've reiterated it here, I actually put a request to, fans of Ask an Atheist, look for a secular reason against gay marriage. And unfortunately, we've found one.
Well, we did say a good one.
That's true.
Good rational one. We still haven't found that. This is something that I think we need to talk about. It's been bouncing around Facebook for the last week or so. And let's throw out some qualifiers before we dive right into this. Before we start, I just want to be clear that we're not bringing this up because we want to start a feud with another show or have an internet war. This isn't about, East Coast atheists versus West Coast atheists. That's not what this is all about. Basically, on this show, when religious people say or do things that are stupid or harmful, we call them on it. We do this often, and we get angry that so many religious people don't get angry, too, that they stay quiet in the face of a lot of this really harmful stupidity, even when it's their specific denomination.
Specifically the Catholic Church. We wondered why there weren't more people up in arms.
Yeah, that we're talking about the Catholic sex abuse scandal, or rather the child rape scandal. This is the children of Catholics that are being raped by priests, and the Catholic Church is explicitly covering up and protecting pedophile priests, moving them on to a new parish where they can get fresh meat and not punishing them, protecting them from prosecution. And in the face of this, Catholics have been, for the most part, dead silent. They stare at their shoes. They don't want to draw attention to it. And this is their church. This is, as being a member of a Catholic church of any denomination, even a really liberal one, you are, in effect, saying the Pope is your leader. And I think in the same way, when your president does something you don't like, you really have an opportunity. You have to say, you know what? No, this guy doesn't speak for me. It's time to call this out.
I think that's absolutely right. One of my main complaints against religion that people say is benign religion. It's not benign. If they would get out there and say something against the people that are making these, like the Harold Camping, where were the people out there running their $100 million billboard campaign saying, this guy's a nut, don't listen to him? And it wasn't out there. So if religion won't police its own, then we need to call them out on that. By the same token, I agree with what we're doing today. We as atheists need to do what we ask the religions to do.
If we ask people to police their own, we must do the same thing. Now, what is this clip?
Well, we are talking about another atheist group. And when they say something stupid and hurtful and bigoted, we got to call it out just as well. We'd be hypocrites if we didn't. So let's talk about this show. This is the Black Atheist of Atlanta. They have a public access show like we used to be on public access and like how the atheist experience is on public access.
Yeah.
So these are folks who are in the same branch of the atheist visibility movement as we are, sort of like the billboard campaign. And this is one of the reasons we started this show, to sort of branch out, that we wanted more atheist shows on the radio and on television. So this is a show that's been on for about 4 months or so. And I've seen the first few episodes on YouTube and on the internet, and it's a very good show.
Yeah, we've been pretty happy with it so far.
It's a very smart show. It's conversational. It's lively. It's the one thing that you always try to avoid is to be boring, and these people are not boring. This is a great show, and I'm like, this is a potentially a really great, I guess you could say, subsection of the atheist visibility movement, Gus getting out there, and it feels kind of like there's some movement on that. But here we go.
Well, the one positive thing we can say about this clip is it isn't boring.
Yeah. One of their hosts last month, a guy named Blackson Bao, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, he went off on an incredibly stupid tirade, and I think this is the sort of thing we really have to let speak for itself.
All right, so here we go. We break this up into three parts. Just let me know if you guys, just break in if you have anything you need to say. And here
well,
we go.
Me, myself, hold on, KD. You know, me being born an atheist, I look at homosexuality as violating the law of reproduction, and that's science. That has nothing to do with religion. So I think as far as creating life, you know, I know that every human being on this planet has came from a man and a woman. And if you look at every mammal, they actually follow the law of reproduction also. So me personally, as an atheist, born an atheist, being the king of all the black atheists, as far as I'm concerned, I'm saying that homosexuality is anti-life. Yeah. So really, I mean, that is really your personal business as far as being tolerant. I don't think you should go out and beat homosexual people up and beat them over the head with a baseball bat. But right. I mean, as far as like me knowing your personal business in your bedroom, keep that to yourself. Cause I mean, I keep my personal business to myself. So I think.
Yeah, this is just nuts. One of all, we want to separate this host from the rest of the show. And the thing that just blows my mind is there is a lesbian host on this show. So he travels in a social circle that should include somebody who should take him to task for this, grab him aside and say, you know what? You're saying something really stupid. This is the wonderful thing about social pressure is that eventually if you hear enough of that stuff, you're not going to say it simply because you just don't want the headache.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of it. And first of all, there is no law of reproduction, no more than there's a law of attraction.
No, it's all this natural is better stuff that we've been talking about, or that we've been hearing about for years. And if natural is better, I should be cold and wet and dead. Because I'm in my 30s, and we originally didn't live that long, and we live in the Pacific Northwest, so it's rainy and wet all the time, so I'm not allowed heat.
I should have died of an abscessed tooth. People should not have pacemakers. Should not be put on life support. This whole natural thing. What is it that this is the same thing James Randi said whenever natural is used as just a word for good.
But even if it's natural argument, even if you want to give that to him, which I'm not saying we should, then you also have the argument of he's got his facts wrong.
Yeah.
We have demonstrated in over 409 species that there are homosexual lesbian tendencies in those species. So he doesn't even have his facts right. He's using a bogus argument with bogus facts.
That's true.
Yeah, the idea of the personal business question, too, is another one that's brought up. And this is something I hear a lot of bigoted people say, that automatically, inherently, a gay relationship is built on sort of illicit sex as opposed to the same, you know, we wouldn't make that sort of assumption about a heterosexual relationship.
Right.
They automatically assume it's about sex. This is like there was a right-wing commentator who recently made a lot of noise about somebody trying to force eHarmony, the dating website, to accept basically applications from people who are gay.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, well, that'll just lead to people having these sort of illicit hookups. And so they're not having hookups now. Those people are having, you know, honest, loving relationships, but it's only the gay people who have illicit sex. And I see that same double standard coming from Blackson Bao here.
Absolutely. And that was Michelle Malkin, correct?
That was Michelle Malkin.
Yeah. And so the thing is yeah, the whole reason, under normal circumstances, yeah, keep your sexual practices to yourself. And that's fine. However, this is a group of people who are being discriminated against because of their sexual practices. So their sexual practices, unfortunately, are now a subject of discussion.
And nobody's saying, you know, ooh, keep it in your pants if you mention that you're married to somebody of the opposite gender, or you have kids, or you mention that you're getting married, or you're in love, or you have a date. There isn't this automatic assumption that we're talking about illicit sex.
Yeah.
This is bigotry.
Straight up is. You're right.
And,
something that gets me is his definition of tolerance is I'm not going to hit him over the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
That's his definition. Let's take that, and I am from the South. I am not a racist. I was raised in the most racist county in America, I firmly believe. So let's take his definition of tolerance and see if he likes that as being, as he calls himself, a black atheist. Let's say, okay, keep it to yourself. Okay, so hide your race from us. We don't want to see that. You know, how racist, how bigoted would I sound if I say that? How about if I say, okay, because you're black, you can't get married.
Yeah.
How about if I say, because you're black, people can discriminate against you. We're not going to beat you up with a baseball bat.
We just won't let you sit in the front of the bus, so we won't let you sit at the lunch counter.
Exactly. I mean, in his whole comment, his whole process here, he throws Dr. Martin Luther King under the bus that Rosa Parks is on the back of. I mean, he absolutely takes racial relations way back before Martin Luther King days in some of the comments that he makes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I still want to take this back to the atheism thing. Is this is something that a lot of people accuse atheism of doing, which is because we have no standard of morality handed down from on high, we must therefore go to nature to come up with our morality. And if it happens in nature, it must be moral. That's crap.
Yeah.
Nature, by definition, is amoral. Morality is our invention.
And it's funny, again, like the thing James Randi once said, you know what else is natural? Bird poop and gravel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you can't put a value judgment on something because it's natural.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like Rich said, that there are so many species that have observed with homosexual behavior already debunks that this is something that predated human culture.
Yeah, I mean, cholera, malaria, harlequin ichthyosis, all of these things are natural, and they're terrible. And they're, by my judgment, that's those are morally bad, but whatever.
And if you think that the stuff he said right now is terrible and offensive,
let's go to the rest.
You might want to brace yourself.
Yeah, here we go.
The issue is the reason we bring it up is because what's happening is homosexuals are hiding behind atheism to justify what they do.
Yeah.
And it's false. Because homosexuality is a social custom, right? And there's a difference between African social customs and European social customs.
No, clearly from the evidence that you gave us earlier, this is not just a social custom.
No.
There's a biological basis for it.
This is something that you are. A social custom is I'm a goth or I'm a punk or I love country music. Being gay is something you are. You're going to be gay no matter what society you're born in, no matter what culture you're put up against, no matter what your upbringing are. You're going to be attracted to the same gender no matter what. This is something that you are.
I'll go you one further and say that atheism is way more of a social custom than any description of sexuality could be.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what's so funny about that whole keep it to yourself argument is that people make that same argument to us. And that's what the fact that he's blind to that. He's on a show talking about how he feels about things.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he keep his personal business to himself? it's because other people are acting on their beliefs and we're responding to it. And it's the same reason that gay rights activists talk about their beliefs, and not necessarily their beliefs, but their orientation at the length, because there are so many lies about it that need to be countered.
Are your loins girded? Shall we move on?
Let's move on.
All right.
Social customs. Homosexuality is a European social custom. Now, we're black atheists. Okay, and there's a difference between a black atheist and a white atheist.
There went Martin Luther King
under the bus. So if white atheists want to embrace European social customs, that's their business.
That's right.
But for Africans to embrace European social customs is genocide.
So
you don't know the history.
So we're essentially saying there is no such thing as an African gay person. The people in Uganda who are going to be possibly murdered if that law that's been pushing gets passed would beg to differ.
I think so, yeah.
But it's just insane, the fact that we're even saying European social custom. So there's no black atheist or black gay people, is that what you're saying? That's crap. That is a load of BS. And the idea that this is some sort of European social custom.
There might be cultural things that come from Europe. There might be cultural accoutrements to that sexuality choice that come from Europe. But that doesn't make the biological basis of this a European thing.
I mean, you are gay. You're not... You don't choose gay the same way you don't choose straight.
And this whole idea that the gay rights movement, the gay civil rights movement, is hiding behind atheism is really, I find it to be the other way around.
That is such a monstrously stupid thing to say.
We've stolen terminology from them to describe coming out as an atheist, coming out of the closet, coming out as an atheist. You know, I tried to say something else to make a delineation, but it just doesn't catch on the same way.
Right. And if anything, the gay rights movement has been sort of embracing a liberal religion.
Yeah.
That they go out of their way to win endorsements from more liberal-leaning clergy members. And a lot of the speeches you get, oh, we believe in the same God you do and God made me gay, a lot of that same stuff. They're not hiding behind atheism. In fact, atheism sometimes hits a bit of a stumbling block when we try to ally with people in the gay rights movement.
Yeah.
And this is something that blogger Greta Christina has written about a lot, is that we're kept at arm's length a lot, even though we are natural allies to the gay rights movement. That We speak out against things like Proposition 8 in California, and pretty viscerally, too.
I think that another thing that I've noticed in the podcast that I do, Living After Faith, we try to be multicultural, multiracial. We try to cover every aspect of things. And to date, we've only found one gay atheist. And I'm not saying that there are a minority or that I guess what I'm saying is there aren't as many gay atheists. There's certainly not the numbers to back up what this guy's saying is that people are hiding behind atheism to cover for their gay.
Right.
I don't think there's any kind of numbers to back that up at all.
There are among the staff, there are a few, and we're actually hoping to do a show on gay atheism in the near future. So I do know a few, but more often than not, there is some disassociation there because they don't want to have more negative stereotypes heaped upon them.
Well, let's talk a bit about Jackson Blau using the word genocide. And what's funny is that we were looking again at this challenge that you tossed out, Sam, the idea of finding a secular motivation for opposing gay rights. I don't think we found it because I think that the cultural basis for the things he's saying very likely comes from a religious upbringing.
Yeah.
Because the same arguments he's trotting out about this being natural, this being genocide or using the same child rearing, those sound like the same red herring arguments that groups like the Family Research Council and other theocratic right-wing religious groups trot out whenever they want to oppose gay rights, but they can't get away with just straight out saying Jesus hates it.
There is something he says a little later, which we'll have to get to later or maybe on a different show, that makes me think Nation of Islam a little bit.
Yeah, there's a big conspiracy element to it, and it's – should we play that bit?
We'll have to hold off on that because we're going into the break. But this is Ask an Atheist. If you'd like to talk to us, if you'd like to talk to us, our phone number is 253-584-1480. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Michael Shermer. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. This show rocks. You want to know what atheists think? This is the place to go. You want to ask them questions and get the truth? You can't handle the truth, but here at Ask an Atheist, they can.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org. You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And that little stinger right before the commercial was a bit of a surprise for Mike.
I am a fan of Michael Shermer. He's a wonderful debunker of silly things and silly beliefs. I'm a fan. So we were talking again before the break about the Black Atheists of Atlanta and one of their hosts, Blackson Bow, who I'm going to give them credit and say he does not represent the views of their show or the other hosts on that show, and then he's going rogue, as the vernacular says. And here's a little bit more of the crazy, homophobic, conspiracy-minded garbage that he is vomiting out.
Because you don't know the history of it.
There is clear biological evidence to show that homosexuality has a biological,
And I bet you those scientists were white, weren't they? What study do you have?
Yeah, and then secondly,
What study? Were those scientists white? Yes or no?
What's that?
Those scientists were white, weren't they?
Why does that matter?
Well, it matters to me because I'm black.
It depends on
the here's why it matters. Here's why it matters. Because if you're not careful, even science can be racist.
That's right.
You ever heard of scientific racism?
No, I don't believe that. Science is based on evidence.
It is.
Actually, I want you to get a book. It's called Medical Apartheid. If you don't think that science is racist, go get a book. And this is a lady that has studied under the doctors that had created the Ebola and also the HIV and also, I forgot what other.
I like that.
Yeah.
There's another disease where your skin would come off. It's called
That's the final wheel coming off right
Look
there.
Look that up. Yeah. And it will show you that racism is alive and well in science.
Right. We're not disagreeing with you. We're saying that scientists themselves can be racist.
That's right.
See, this is another bit of evidence that these people are effing loony. I really don't know a non-profane way to talk about that almost.
There is such a thing. He mentioned scientific racism in a part of the clip we didn't play. And that is a concept. There is such a thing as scientific racism, but it's not the science itself being racist. It's individuals or groups of people taking scientific concepts and applying them in a racist way.
And it's also the pollution of science. Science is not a worldview, as a lot of people like to throw at us. Science is not an ideology. Science is just a process. And it's a process that does everything it can to try to weed out these admitted biases that human beings have. And what really happens when those biases seep in and pollute their work, that is called pseudoscience. Yeah. What it's doing is messing around with your data or trying to apply your data in ways that it doesn't work. And here's the beautiful thing about science is that it's self-correcting. We can hold on to a bad idea for a long time or a short time, but eventually someone will point out that you're doing science wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the sort of stuff that he's talking about. The other thing, too, is the conspiracy theories just start bleeding into this thing, where he's talking about both the Ebola virus and the HIV virus being created in a lab. That is bunkum.
That is conspiracy theories. Now, we attempted to contact the Black Atheists of Atlanta and a similar organization in the Atlanta area to get their comment on this and to, you know, make this a little – to give them a chance to respond. We haven't heard from them yet, but that invitation remains open.
Yeah, and – Black Atheists of Atlanta, I know that you can't all agree with this guy. So please make a statement, because you're looking on YouTube and another Facebook and all these places this is getting promoted. This is the most attention your show has gotten so far, and this is going to shape the way that people see you.
Right.
Yeah.
You have the opportunity. This is the other thing, the reason we call it out, because we know that for somebody out there who watched this on TV, this is their first exposure to atheists. That this is going to color the way they treat all of us. And like we said, we get angry at religious people when religious people stay quiet, when people in their community say hurtful, bigoted things, and we would be hypocrites if we did not call them out.
Yeah.
And I think absolutely that's what we're doing. And in fact, I think we should just directly call them out. We have a telephone number. You can give us a call, 584-1480, and we'll be here next week as well. And
absolutely.
We don't just welcome your call. We challenge you. Bring it. Bring it. Come on the program. Let's talk about it.
Either double down on this horrible, you know, conspiracy-minded bunk, or call it out. You know, disavow this guy. Say, you know what, this guy does not speak for the Black Atheists of Atlanta.
And if you don't want to challenge us, just a statement somewhere, and we'll go find it. But call us. Be a part of this conversation. I don't want this to be one-sided. We want to give you a chance to refute.
A lot of times when a public persona, somebody says something hurtful or bigoted, they try to crawl under a rock. Now is the time to sort of man up. Be an adult on this. Own what has been said on your show and make it good. Make it better.
Or say you were wrong. We
Just
have
say
to
you
accept
were wrong.
That.
Yeah.
If that's what he chooses to do, we have to accept that. If that is now his opinion, you have to let that go. Again, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and I'm about ready to put this sorted business behind us.
Let's do it.
Guys?
Let's do it.
Now, it's kind of interesting. We go from one atheist show to another. This is the one-year anniversary of Ask an Atheist as a show. We have been doing this for 12 months now.
12 months, both on public access television in Seattle and now on commercial radio in Tacoma.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what I'd like to do, I haven't been with the program the entire year. You two guys have. You were in the founding. So if you don't mind, let me just kind of back out and play reporter here and ask you guys some questions and get you to tell us the things we want to know about it. It's been a year. Where did the idea come up with? Who started off with the idea of,
let's get on TV.
Oh, well, if somebody has to fall on the sword and take blame for this show, I suppose it ought to be me. I first came to the board of Seattle Atheists back in, was it late 2009?
Actually, I think it was 2008 still at that point.
Was it 2000? Oh, yeah. Wow. So it was late in the year, and I had been a fan of the Atheist Experience, and I saw that we could expand on that in a way very similar to how people started the bus ad campaigns and billboard campaigns, that it started in the UK, and they're like, you know what, let's do that too. That there's a visibility component here. This is the atheist visibility movement, us putting ourselves out there, and that one show in Texas is not enough, and that we'd like to expand on that.
Yeah.
And this is a good thing. So I went to the Seattle Atheist Board. Sam was on the board. I was not yet. I was on the board the next year. And put this show forward. There wasn't a great degree of enthusiasm, and I don't blame them. I've been on boards before where somebody comes with a big pie-in-the-sky idea, and usually the undertone is, here's an attempt thing that you guys should really ought to do. I'm not going to create it, but you guys can. You can just can throw money at my wonderful idea. And there wasn't a great deal of enthusiasm because, of course, there's money, and money's limited. So, no hard feelings there. Sam is the one member of the board who got really excited about it.
And, rewind about 6 or 7 months before that, I actually had an idea for a radio show or podcast that I wanted to do called Part of the Problem. And it's actually a really different from what Ask an Atheist ended up being, but we've used some elements for it. It was actually going to be a show for atheists about why we're bad at being atheists. It was going to be sort of a self-critique.
So essentially the first 20 minutes of our show.
Essentially the first 20 minutes of our show, yeah. So, and it was because at the time I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I was listening to the Atheist Experience and stuff like that. And the thing that I noticed again and again was that the people who were on the show were the experts talking to people who were not schooled on it. And I kind of wanted to invert that and just show atheists as normal people who have questions about what atheism is supposed to be.
I think that's really steered the direction of this show as well, is that we go out of our way to tell you we're not experts.
Yeah.
We're hobbyists at best, as far as things like science or biological anthropology, evolution. I've taken college classes, but I wouldn't pretend to be an expert on any of this stuff.
I'm a science cheerleader at best, and you don't want to see my outfit. So
I have. You really don't.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, and I'll take your word.
It will burn into your memory forever, and you'll try to scrub it out with alcohol, and it won't come out.
Yeah, so that kind of fell over dead because nobody was interested. And then you showed up on the board a few months later saying, I would like to do a cable access show, and I never even considered doing cable access. I'm like, no, we should do this. We should do this. And it was you, me, Casey, and Jeremy, the four of us, really pulled in and got the classes done to get on scan.
There was about 9 months of prep before we got that. We were pretty much aware of the fact that it was going to be a while before anyone got really excited, aside from the four of us, about this project.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel real yet. People don't want to sort of invest time or money into something if they don't think it's going to pan out. And the truth is, most of the time, they're like, wow, this is really hard, and they quit.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
You know, one of the questions I get asked, and I'm going to throw it at you guys, people say, well, you're an atheist, you don't believe in anything, so why do you have to say anything? So why have a show at all? You're an atheist, you don't believe anything, so I'm going to throw that at you.
Well, I think that the really important thing is that, I believe in plenty of things. I just don't believe in invisible men in the sky who judge me when I masturbate. I would say that people do believe these things, and there are consequences of those beliefs. There are consequences that I don't like, and I think that if I don't want those consequences to come to fruition, that I have to speak out. Because being as an atheist, people are going to talk about me and talk about people like me.
People have strange ideas about what atheists are, and the reason I became an activist in the first place was because of the fight that Ray Comfort and the Rational Response Squad had, and the idea that the atheist was the most hated minority in America, and they had a panel on CNN that had no atheists on it. And this is all what you're talking about is people don't know what we're like. They all assume we're terrible. And the only way to change that is to put atheists in a place where people can see them.
There's a long-form discussion there that, yeah, you can get Richard Dawkins on, CNN, and he'll talk on there for maybe 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But, when you're saying – this is, again, something that Noam Chomsky said once. When you're saying something that isn't, quote, common knowledge and isn't repeated in the media and isn't well represented,
yeah. You
need more time to explain your beliefs because it kind of goes against the grain of people's thinking. And you need more time to explain it. So it isn't just like, wow, that's really shocking. I'm going to need more evidence to back that up.
All right. I know we've done a lot with this. Now, you started at SCAN. It was cable access. tell how things developed there from the secret pilot episode that doesn't exist to a wall full of plaques.
Well, we came on at Scan, and I think that aside from maybe the high bar, we were the only non-conspiracy-minded show on there.
Yeah, that was a pack of crazies. Not the people running it. The Scan organization was a bunch of stand-up people. But the shows on Scan... Oh.
Yeah, the people who work at Scan are kind of like kindergarten teachers, and that they're constantly being accused of jamming the signal on behalf of the Illuminati. There's a lot of stuff like that. And we've really found over the course of the show that even the music programs were run by people who... We're conspiracy-minded.
Yeah.
And it was almost kind of like that moment in a movie where you realize that everybody's in on it. It's like you feel like you're in some sort of 1970s dystopian Charlton Heston movie, and you're like, oh, my God, even my partner was in on it.
Well, I mean, you guys had to go through classes because you guys lived up in King County, and I couldn't participate because I'm down here in Pierce. And so we got together. In order to get a show on Scan, you had to do a pilot. And so we did a 15-minute pilot that no one will ever see because, man...
It was painful. I mean, that was the real thing, that the impetus for us actually scripting out our episodes from then on, because that was us just flying by the seat of our pants. And when you see that little red light pop on top of a camera, and your brain
shuts down.
It shuts down completely.
Yeah.
Your mind goes blank, and you just stare like a deer in the headlights and just babble for 15 minutes.
And so we watch this and we go, wow. Wow, what are we thinking? Wow.
And, but seriously.
But we submitted it.
And we got it on.
And we got the slot we wanted, too. So apparently, compared to everything else on Scan.
By Scan standards, it's actually still pretty good. we actually had a show that ended. It didn't just, like, cut off at the hour.
And then we worked hard at it. We pushed. We had a couple interviews forced upon us that we did. And then...
I think it went really well, and we really sort of built our skills before moving on to commercial radio.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that, you know, one thing we need to mention here is you kind of downplay yourself when you say we were good by Scan standards, but when you look at their award ceremony, you walked away with the house.
And that's true.
Yeah,
true.
We won, I think, best new program.
Best new program, best live program, best religious programming, and...
there was one more, I forget.
Profit. I don't know what that other one is.
We won 4 awards.
We did. We walked away, and there were people, the conspiracy people there were thinking that maybe...
This was a conspiracy.
Yeah, the Obama administration decided we would get all the awards that year.
That was one of the weird experiences when we would go to these producer association meetings, and I think me and Casey were standing there, and at one point somebody's... You know, because we're dealing with used equipment that's like 20 years old.
Yeah.
So this stuff is going to go on the blink every so often. And somebody's like complaining that the sound quality is really bad. That must mean that the Obama administration is messing with the feed. And they look at us, me and Casey, and go, but they're not going to mess with your show. And we were just standing there sort of dumbfounded. And if I could have asked a follow-up question, are you saying they were spies? Are you saying that the powers that be are just sympathetic to us or what?
You're right. We do downplay ourselves. But I will the one moment I will remember from the Scan award ceremony was I had to carry the awards to the car, and I'm in my you know suit and tie, and I'm carrying these awards like I'm gonna drop one, and I walk out and I stop and I look for people and I look to the right and it's the conspiracy coterie over there.
Yeah.
And
the tinfoil mafia,
and they all give you the slowly I turn narrowed eyed unhappy how dare you tread upon our sacred ground look.
No coincidences exist in these people's worldview.
I waved. Hi.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Have a nice time.
You could be nice about it.
Then Scan goes away.
Yeah.
Funding changes and Scan goes away, and that would be a great opportunity to let something that wasn't good drop. But in my opinion, when you move to radio, things really picked up. How'd the dialogue go? Where did the decision come?
Well, Scan, this is kind of... I made the push to radio. Radio has always been a medium I've loved. Just even from the technology. I got my ham radio license when I was 13. And I've always listened to radio and listened to podcasts in the car. I love the format. And, when we discovered that Scan was going away, we were just starting to get the attention from the show. As like the internet was picking up, the podcasts were picking up. It's like, we can't let this go. We've got a lot of really good material we should continue on with, but we need to find another venue. And this isn't like the East Coast. There aren't 15 cable access channels you can go to. So, I started looking around and I found KLAY, and and then they were looking for content, and we had a really nice conversation with Bruce here, and he likes to, you know, he likes to talk a lot, and it's, and we just started talking about the business of radio and how the show would look on radio. And I started talking to you, and you gave me some ideas, and we just started adapting the format for radio. And
I like it a lot better on radio.
This is way better.
I think the fact that we don't really have to pay attention to the camera, but that we can actually just look at each other and have a conversation. The fact that we can actually up to three different hosts.
Yeah.
The show's become more conversational. It's become more casual. It's less of a lecture show.
When we stopped being news anchors and became a group of people sitting around the table, you know, theoretically having a drink, if not actually having a drink, and just having a conversation, I think the show really took on a life of its own at that point.
I think we've loosened up. We've become a lot less like other shows, I guess you can say, in our genre, and really started to develop our own voice.
Well, this was the thing. This comes back to part of the problem, is that we don't want to be experts. We want to be – we're just atheists in the community, living a life, working our jobs, working on this. And we have some ideas, and we want to share them with you, but we're not the arbiter of truth here.
Yeah, we're not the Pope of atheism any more than Richard Dawkins is.
That yeah.
We can speak on behalf of ourselves, and at least on behalf of our little group, but in the end, we're not coming at you with a bunch of letters after our name. We're not coming at you as somebody who pretends to have the answer to any question. And this is something that happens on radio a lot, and I'm really glad this is something we make a real effort to avoid, is that we are not the arbiters of truth. We are not the people who come at you and pretend that, like, we know everything. And this is something practically every religious leader, even the really nicer ones, do, is that they want to say that they've got a direct line to the creator of the universe and the meaning of life. We're not going to pretend that. We're not going to be experts. We're not going to be experts on anything other than our own opinion.
Yeah. And at the very end of the day, I have never had this much fun talking about atheism or anything for that matter. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Thanks for joining us on our one-year anniversary. We'll see you in a couple minutes.
Are you tired of religious dogma influencing government policy? Do you support the separation of church and state? Then the Secular Coalition for America is your voice in Washington, D.C. The Secular Coalition for America is the only national lobbying organization representing atheists, agnostics, humanists, and other secular Americans in our nation's capital. The Secular Coalition for America speaks out for millions of non-theistic and non-religious Americans who support public policies based on science and reason, not religious bias. Go to secular.org today to sign up for emails and get involved. That's secular.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Better to help those people feeling the wrath than an atheist. We don't believe in God, so we're pretty sure we won't get raptured out of here.
You can help by donating to Rapture Relief.
We'll use the money to help those afflicted during Armageddon.
And if for some reason this all turns out to be just another failed prophecy, your money won't be wasted.
We'll give it to Camp Quest, which teaches children critical thinking and science so they won't be duped by religious fables in the first place.
Learn more at rapture-relief.org.
A satirical benefit for Camp Quest, brought to you by Seattle Atheists.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we have a call. This is Leah in Tacoma. How you doing today?
Fine. I just stumbled across your program on AM radio.
Fantastic.
I was punching those buttons looking for the news, and I didn't realize how long you've been on.
Yeah, we've been on AM radio for just the past 6 months or so, since about March.
No, since January.
Was it since January?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. It has been a long time.
I've been an atheist all my life. I'm third generation in my family on my mother's side. And I've wrestled all my life with the reactions you'll get to atheism, especially in this country. And I wondered what magic phrase or way to hold your tongue or or handshakes or something, what is it you can do to keep people from giving you the conventional shut door?
You know, that's a great question, because a recent study showed that atheists are the most discriminated against group in America, yet at the same time, we're the fastest growing group in America. And I think that's I can't give you an answer to your question. I wish I could. But what I can say is what we're trying to do every week is answer that question by raising awareness of atheism, by letting people see that we're not a bunch of nutcakes and nutcases and fruitcakes, that we are really just intelligent people looking for a life based on reason and science, and we're not going to just believe whatever comes our way.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you that there's a need for this, especially after 70 years of trying. I've found that perhaps the reaction you get sometimes is anger.
Yeah.
At just discovering you think of yourself as an atheist. And I translate anger as being fear.
I think it's absolutely fear.
Yeah.
I think that
I think they're afraid of giving up something. They're giving up something familiar and comforting to them, and they needn't. They can be religionists without being deists.
Well, I think that's exactly it. But you were talking about these religious ideologies where doubt and things like that are things to be suppressed and things to be afraid of. So when they've been taught that when you start having a conversation, you find yourself asking these questions, it does come out as anger and fear. And I don't think we're going to find that magic phrase that's going to be both honest and totally innocuous.
Yeah.
Is that there have been these billboards that go up that simply say things like, hey, we exist and we're capable of being good too. And you get a lot of widespread anger at something like that. And I think the only thing that'll get rid of that anger and that fear that we're talking about is people getting more used to hearing it.
Well, and I agree. And I found that I have the most success with asking them to separate a belief in God from a belief in religion, because they are not the same thing. They may coexist, but there are many places in this world that are perfectly religious, like Buddhists and Confucians and Taoists, that do not have a Godhead. And once you can get them to separate a belief in God from a belief in their religion, you have a toe in the door.
That's exactly true, is that a lot of people, when they hear atheism, they hear giving up religion, it's not really the God that they're afraid to give up. It's not really the mythology and the supernatural stuff that they're looking to give up. What they're afraid of is losing
community.
Their family,
yeah.
Losing their community, losing that support structure.
And they can keep that. In fact, I call myself a Christian atheist because I still go to church, wouldn't miss a christening or a wedding, and I have favorite holidays. To go in the Lutheran Church, they have Reformation Sunday, which is my way of striking a blow for liberty. And I think that if we can encourage people to think of atheists as not being anti-religious.
Well, I think that's really up to the religious people, is that there are things that I'm definitely against, and I'm against magical thinking, and I'm against bigotry. And as long as at the heart a lot of these religious fables have this kind of divisiveness. I'm against magical thinking or faith-based thinking simply because I think it's inevitably harmful. Not in a slippery slope way, but I think if your methodology for determining the difference between fact and fantasy is so intangible, that inevitably a bad idea and a harmful idea is going to get in there.
Another thing that we're trying to build with the atheism visibility movement here is the thing is that there really is no secular alternative to that sort of religious community.
Right.
And you have a lot of experience with that
as
a pastor.
Michael Shermer and I were talking about this very thing, and he said this has got to be the next phase of the new atheist movement, is that we must replace the things that the church does. The church does an awesome job taking care of people when they're grief-stricken. The church does an awesome job when a new couple moves into town and gives them a community to be a part of. And a lot of times atheism is looked at as saying you've got to give up all this great community you have for Darwin.
Yeah.
When Darwin's dead and gone, he isn't going to do anything for you. The reality is we need to build an atheist community that pays hospital visits when someone's in the hospital.
There's a lot of atheists who say they don't need that and they can go it alone.
Yes, excuse me, gentlemen.
Yes?
But this is where we part company, because I believe that you can't get, talk about herding cats, I don't think you can get any two atheists to go to the same church. These are people who have literally nothing in common. Why would they have any other reason to do something
I think I wouldn't say that we have nothing in common.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a shared experience
being
against this.
Big G, that's nothing.
Well, not just that.
We're humans. We have the big H.
No, I'm just saying that we have more than that. There's a shared narrative that I know what it's like to be an atheist in this country
but
and in this
way. You can't renounce your ethnicity, your family traditions, your memories.
Sure, you can.
I think you should work best within your own church.
No, I don't think it's necessary to have a church. I think it's possible to have a community, but that community doesn't have to be a church.
I didn't inherit a church. There would be nowhere for me to go.
There's always Buddhism.
But then Buddhism also makes a lot of supernatural claims that I take real issue
with.
Not
all Buddhism makes a lot of supernatural
claims. A lot of it does.
Claims.
There's a lot of attitudes towards women in Buddhism that I don't fan of.
There is such a thing as secular Buddhism, though. It doesn't.
There is, but I don't agree with the tenets of Buddhism that all desire is suffering.
I agree with that. I agree that I disagree.
Fair enough.
So,
well, we're probably going to be independent agents out there in the wilderness calling to each other occasionally but never really coalescing around function.
I don't think we have to coalesce around a shared ideology. I think that we can have a STEM community the same way that you can have a community in a city, and you can have a pluralistic perspective on it, that we're not trying to push a certain belief system and we're not kicking people out when they're off the island.
But there is no ideology. What we have in common is that we are absent. It's a negative quality. We simply don't believe in a person.
I would say I agree with that, but I'm just saying that it isn't necessary to have that shared ideology to have community.
Leah, thank you very much for your call. I actually look forward to hearing from you again. I'm glad you're actually here in Tacoma.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. I think the necessity of a shared community can be enough to create that community.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily just to come in inheriting a new one, and it's not necessary to abandon your previous, your family connections, your family traditions. But if we're going to have an atheist community, we have to invent an atheist community. We have to build those traditions. We have to build that background. And this is what you and Shermer were talking about.
Right. And it's based on the needs of the human. The churches, and he compared it to Northern Europe. By the way, you can download our Living After Faith podcast this week, and this is what the interview I'm talking about. But what he talks about there, Northern Europe, government does what religion in America does. And up there, you don't really have a lot of religion. You have a very strong atheist community. Government takes care of the sick. Government takes care of the poor. Government does a lot of the things that the religious or that the church has stepped in to fill in the United States. So for us to build an atheist community, I'm not going to say it's going to look like a church. As a matter of fact, that would turn me off pretty bad if it looks like a church.
Yeah.
But some of the things like Becky and Sam came to visit when Deanna was in the hospital. They took me out, fed me a beer or two, and brought me back. It was one of the most needed breaks of all time. But why did they do that? Because God told them to? No. They did it because Rich and Deanna are friends of theirs.
You know? And we knew that you were going through a rough patch.
Exactly.
An accident like that, even if it's totally survivable, still is still stressors involved, and somebody needs to step in and say, hey, how you doing?
But that's example of the atheist community.
Yeah.
Here, Valerie Tirico, when I went through a situation where I lost everything I owned, it turned into hazmat, and that's another story. But she called me up just out of the blue. We were having coffee, and she realized what happened. She took me through her house, gave me towels, gave me a bed to sleep on, things that I – and that's part of the atheist community that I'm talking about is when you see the need of a human being, you give to that human being, you build a community.
And I think, we could look at the example of the gay rights community, which is that – there are community centers that are born out of this sort of thing. It doesn't have to be a shared ideology. It doesn't have to be a church. That people always point that the civil rights movement of the 1960s is built out of churches. I think that's incidental. I don't think that was necessary. It came out that way, but it could have been community centers. It could have been the same way that the gay rights community is moving now. You don't need a shared religion. You don't need a shared ideology. All you really need is have a sense that you have some moral responsibility to the people around you and that you care about whether they hurt or not.
I might disagree with you. I do think on some level a shared ideology is necessary. It just doesn't have to be a supernatural ideology. It doesn't have to be an ideology about the afterlife. It doesn't have to be an ideology about God. What it does have to be is an ideology about everybody getting equal rights. That is an ideological concept.
Yeah, that is a worldview.
Yeah.
Atheism in itself is just a lack of belief on one question. It's not That's the thing, is as far as this being an atheist community, we're not forming a church. And that's the one thing I disagree with the caller on, that we just immediately have to pick one of these pre-chosen faith communities and lob onto there. That's not the only way to get community.
If you're comfortable staying there, I don't want to force people to make choices, though. If the caller is comfortable there and
do what makes you happy.
Exactly.
You do what makes you happy, but don't assume that it'll make me happy too. The sort of things you get out of a church, people making unjustifiable claims, that's not a group I want to be a part of. I mean, I might want them as my friends, but I don't want them as necessarily, this is my group of people.
The caller and I share some history. We're both generational atheists. Well, actually, in my case, it's generational agnostics. But apparently, she inherited a church from the other side of her family. When she calls again, I will ask her.
Yeah.
But in my case, there was no church to go to. We were not church attenders at all. So where would I fit in that? And in this case, I've decided to make the atheism movement sort of my home base in that respect.
Yeah, I was excommunicated, so where would I go?
Yeah, and I think Rich's example is a really good one for pointing out that, are you going to renounce the traditions of your family? If they're hurting you, yes. If they're giving you ultimatums that say you can't be you, or we're going to shun you or hurt you socially, then yes, you should renounce that stuff.
And Rich also has a point. Sometimes you don't have a choice.
Yeah, they kick you out.
They show you the door.
That community oftentimes does come with an unspoken ultimatum that if, like Rich, you were trying to reform your church for a
Absolutely.
Very long time after the fact, and how did they respond to that reform?
They gave me the right foot of fellowship, as we refer to that.
So there really isn't a lot of room. That when a community, I think, is built around an ideology that says you're either part of this group or you're outside, I don't think that's something – I don't think you should sacrifice yourself just for that sense of community. That you can find a community that will give you both things.
Yeah.
That can give you your sense of self and actually values you because of that sense of self.
But again, I don't want to say that the position that she's coming from is bad. It works well for her. It sounds like she's having a really good time. It sounds like her needs are being addressed. And if you can find that, good.
Yeah. But don't assume that I'm somebody that just needs to be a Buddhist simply because I'm not a Christian.
Yeah, I think we've said that a lot.
Yeah.
I just want to make it clear that we're not dogpiling on the caller.
Oh, I know. I know.
So shall we do this news story?
Let's do this news story.
News stories?
Yeah.
This is a fun piece, Sam, if you will.
All right. This news piece comes from the newspaper Yadio Arahanat. I don't know. I can't pronounce that. Via the Spanish news blog 20 Minutos. This is actually translated by Becky. A rabbinical court in Jerusalem sentenced a dog to death by stoning after finding that the soul of a cursed secular lawyer had inhabited the dog 20 years earlier.
But not anymore?
I have no idea.
Well, now that it's dead, no, I guess.
Well, yeah, clearly not. The incident started in the ultra-Orthodox community of... I need Becky in here. Ultra-Orthodox community, when the dog had entered and refused to leave after repeated attempts by guards to chase it away. According to the newspaper report, one of the rabbinical judges then recalled that 20 years earlier, in the same place, his predecessor had cursed a famous secular lawyer whose soul, at death, should be banished into an animal that Jewish religious law considers impure, in this case, a dog.
You know what's kind of funny about this is when I hear that kind of beginning to a story, the ending that I feel myself going towards is, and then on the door handle was a hook. So why was the dog was trying to get into a court case and a courtroom, and that was the evidence that this was a former lawyer?
Yeah. Well, the rabbinical judge, whose name was not revealed, said he determined the lawyer's soul was indeed inside the dog and that the dog, angered by the curse, had returned to the court to be released. The rabbis ordered the stoning of the animal until the soul out, i.e. until the dog died. At some point, the dog reportedly ran away. The rabbi, presiding judge of the rabbinical court, denied that there was a court ruling on the matter, but one of the guards confirmed the facts and said that the rabbi had left a verbal order to a group of children who stoned him, not to punish the animal, but to liberate the soul of the lawyer who had intimidated the canine.
Liberate your soul sounds like a euphemism for kill.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, weren't they using that in the Crusades? Wasn't liberating the souls of the heathens?
Yeah, they were talking about rocking this dog to sleep with big rocks.
Liberating your soul sounds like the sort of remark that Hannibal Lecter would have to sort of say, no, he's actually doing a good thing.
But why do you have to farm out stoning the dog? Why did you have to go to some kids?
You outsource the thing to kids? I don't know.
Hey, kids, you bored?
Yeah, this is a thing you want to do. Hey, kids, you like cruelty to animals? Do I?
Oh, jeez.
Well, if I got something for you.
Yeah, that it's got a borderline. Well, okay, not borderline. That's child abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, contract out kids to kill an animal because bizarre circumstances, because your predecessor had the lawyer's soul put into the
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of that movie Wraith, where where Charlie Sheen is killed and comes back to life to get revenge.
I didn't even know that this was something that they did.
He didn't come back as a dog, though. That would have been a very different movie.
All right, well, I think that's what we got for today. We are not meeting up anywhere because most of us are ill, so we're going to go sleep now. My name is Sam Olvey. With me today was Mike Gillis.
Hey.
And Rich Lyons.
Glad to be here.
Our call screener was Deanna Joy. Our production assistant was Becky Friedman. Our music is by Chris Coleman. And if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, our voicemail number is 206-420-0997. You can leave us a voicemail, tell us where you're from, and we'll play it on the air. You guys have a good day. I think it might be.